Now broadcasting the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show, positioning your business with strategies for an extraordinary future. Dr. Nilda features expert guests from diverse backgrounds to bring you their stories and strategies that have helped them reach their success. The diversity in industries gives you that panoramic view from an array of industries. They are innovators, thought leaders, trendsetters, and strategists. Here, Dr. Nilda reveals strategies that will position you to be on the cutting edge and be able to do what you love with the people you like, making the profits you want to live the lifestyle that you have dreamed of. And now, here's your host, Dr. Nilda Perez.
Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show. Today, I have a very special person here who specializes in Generation Z. I want to also welcome my co-host, Rachel Calderon. Hello, Rachel.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
Okay. So I want to tell you a little bit about Ann Boysen, who is a very fascinating person. Ann Boysen is the founder of After the Millennials, the first consultant service and blog designated specifically to understanding our youngest generation. I think if any of us have young children, we get that. We don't get them. She uses an original method drawn from strategic foresight and data analysis. And dives deep into the social statistics, trend spotting, and data mining to advise businesses and nonprofits on how to act on early signs of change. She shares her insights as an advisor via consulting projects and keynotes around the world. Boysen also works as an alliance partner for the Pearson Strategic Group. She is the vice president of the Central Texas chapter of the World's Future Society, and she holds a master's in future studies from Texas in Houston in an additional graduate level education in business analytics and data mining. I think this is fascinating. So welcome, Ann. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me here.
It is fascinating to have you. And I love the fact that you actually understand Generation Z. You're probably an anomaly because I think I know a lot of parents who have no clue.
Yes, she is correct on that.
So this is great, I tell you. So Ann, I want to start with the first question, which is why, again, this is to me is such a big thing to be able to understand or try to understand Generation Z, because there are so many people that don't understand them, and namely the parents. We have no idea, I mean, what's going on with these kids. There's so many changes. So you come from that foresight and you actually are understanding them. So I want to know, how do you do this? And tell me a little bit about what you do and how you do it.
Well, so I think maybe that is the reason why I'm focusing on this particular area of foresight, is because I don't really understand them.
Okay.
So it's been a quest for quite a while for me to figure them out. One thing that I realized very quickly as a futurist, by the way, I don't really involve myself with making a whole lot of predictions. I'm more interested in trying to understand how different people tick. I felt this was very important early in my career as a newly minted futurist, because I felt that you can't just document the trends themselves. You have to understand how the different trends in the environment, such as technology and environmental issues, how this happens in reaction with social trends. Like how are people adopting, or how are people reacting to these external forces?
Right.
And I felt that there was a need to do a little bit more rigorous research into this domain, and specifically maybe when it comes to understanding the next generation, because very often when a new generation with new experiences, with different experiences are entering a new life phase, they bring with them a certain set of values and attitudes and behaviors that might seem a little foreign.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt as a professional, I felt this very, this need was never strong, but maybe even more personally, I think it was even more compelling for me as a parent, because this is, these were the years that my children were born. We were post 9/11. Then we had a big recession, and the world started to become a very different place. Technology was taken off. We had digital devices and social media, and the world was just a totally different place. And so, you know, a lot of the parent to child advisory very often is based on the world that we recognize from when we were younger, right?
Right.
And but the problem is that the world has changed so much, that world does no longer exist. And so if we're going to be able to advise our children or employees or if you're going to understand our new markets or voters, in whatever capacity, we need to really understand how they tick. And it is easy to just say, like, okay, we'll just talk to the younger people themselves. And you will get a lot of good answers that way. The problem is they cannot contextualize themselves. We have been through that stage. We know what it means to have lived in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. They can only understand it from their own perspective. So we need to sort of be anthropologists into their world. And that's what motivates me.
Oh, I love it. Oh, my goodness. That's, oh, yeah. You know what? I never thought of that, but you're right. An anthropologist, because their world, our world, they have no concept whatsoever of the things that we've lived through the different. So we've lived through the changes, but this has been a constant for them.
Yes.
Which is why a one-year-old can grab your phone and be able to program it better than you can.
Yeah.
From a STEAP perspective, STEAP being, you know, the social, technological, environmental, economical, and political, from that perspective, where do you feel, I mean, socially, we're in a totally different world. Mm-hmm. And we still live between both because we still pull a lot from our background, but Generation Z doesn't do that. So tell me a little bit about that. Where do you feel it's different for kids from this perspective?
So I very often get asked, so, you know, there's been a lot of research on millennials and the childhood of millennials are very different from the childhood experiences of Generation Z because, you know, they grew up after 9/11 and, you know, in a totally different world. It was different growing up in the 80s and the 90s. So the question I typically get is, how are Gen Z different from millennials? And I want to say that some trends are continuing and some trends are actually, you know, we reach a peak and then we're going back. We're starting to see some signs that, or maybe not even back, but going in a new direction. As futurists, we're familiar with the S-curve where, you know, a trend barely starts and then it really takes off.
Right.
And then it kind of slows down and maybe even goes back a little bit. So depending on where the trend is on that S-curve, that is kind of like where you can kind of imagine where Generation Z is at the moment. Then mostly not what people are interested in. Then how are they changing things? How is Generation Z changing and why in response to these trends? And I want to say that I believe that where they are representing a big difference is there were two founding experiences in their childhood, which are kind of we're starting to see now. And that their experiences with the recession of the 2008. And this is sort of like, and this informs many, many other different trends. And the experiences with digital technology and social media. So starting with the recession. So, you know, I typically don't like to say that we have a trend, unless I've seen at least, you know, maybe two or three surveys or several, you know, data points that come together. So you really start seeing a movement because they're so easy to just, you know, do one survey or ask a few kids here and there, you know, do you like this? Do you don't like, you know, and then you get more or less random answers. So I really like to see that there's some substance. There really is a change. And one of the changes we're seeing is that this is a much more risk averse generation, specifically when it comes to money. They're very concerned of the value of money. Okay. And again, they don't take continued growth for granted, because they've seen foreclosures. They've seen that, you know, suddenly you can lose your job overnight. They also know that a lot of the jobs that exist today are going to be automated. So they don't take that for granted. So that's one area. We even actually see this in thrifting culture. So it used to be that young people wanted to put, you know, big brands on their big logos, you know, on their clothes.
Right,
and
right.
Signify, you know, I have the money to buy this. Now it's opposite. They go thrifting. They like to go to thrift stores and, hey, I got all of this whole bag full of clothes for $10. That gives status today. So that's one interesting. We actually even see it a little bit in higher education. We actually post peak education, because these guys don't know if they want to take huge student loans to get a degree in something that may or may not be around in terms of job security in the future.
Wow.
So that's something higher education really needs to look at. And then the next, the other trend that has to do with digital technology, that's a very interesting area. So Jean Twenge, who is a professor at University of California, she's been studying generational trends for years. And she had an article in The Atlantic this summer that went viral. She also had a book out about, she calls them iGeneration. And basically what her findings, by looking at many trends, what she's finding out is that there's this very strong correlation between the enormous amount of time that kids today spend on their phones and yes. their mental well-being, which is, there's a negative relationship there.
Right.
So, you know, there's some reasons for concern. And again, I think it comes back to this, you know, this generation being digital natives. I personally have some service to find some good things about it, is that, you know, that it is empowering when used the right way. They have access to a market out there. They have access to channels. They have access to, they can do so much with technology. But at the same time, it is sort of like a social game that is always on. You know, it's mm-hmm. always this comparison to other people. You never get away. There's always somebody you have to interact with, positively or negatively, and you never get a break. And this is contributing to their mental well-being in maybe not always very good ways. So.
Okay. So
I have to agree with you there. On the other hand, parenting, I have been able to kind of hold back my children. I don't necessarily have them on all social media. Well, my kids now are adults, but the when they were younger, I used to pull them away from all of that stuff, because I knew that no matter how much, you know, this whole technology thing is and social media, I knew that at some point it wasn't going to necessarily, what do they say? Like, an overload of something is always never good. It has to be a balance. So I always believed in balance, but unfortunately with a lot of working parents, a lot of our time, you know, the 90s kids or, you know, 80s kids, we work and we have to work a lot to keep up with these houses. And so we don't even recognize sometimes what's happening to our children, you know? And so our kids are getting sucked up, like you said, by this technology, and they're almost being desensitized.
Yeah. To that point, Rachel, I have a question for Anne, and that is, many of our children, especially, you know, Gen Z, there's no human interaction. I remember the kids when they were younger, they would come over and we would have like dinner, let's say like Thanksgiving or Sunday dinner, and the kids were communicating via phone. So luckily, I think we had the wisdom of being able to pull the phones from them and say, no, we're going to sit on the table, we're going to talk. They were having a conversation, but all of it was via their smartphone. So, but today, children are actually interacting that way. And what I'm learning, again, I come from that behavioral health background, and as a therapist, and I still do some therapy, I'm finding that the kids that are coming now, that Gen Z, they're finding it very difficult to communicate. So they're actually texting me their answers when they're sitting in front of me. So they're not disconnecting from that technology. And I believe that on some level, that's cause for concern.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that, yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. What we are seeing, though, in some surveys is that we're actually starting, you know, I mentioned that S-curve. I think it's starting to kind of slope off when it comes to if we have a variable that has to do with human interaction. Because if you compare the responses from older young millennials to Gen Zers, they are more likely to say that they prefer face-to-face interaction than digital interaction. So the trend is starting to move back again. And one of the ways that we notice that is if you say young kids today, they don't text as much as they might be doing FaceTime, for example. So FaceTime and video conferencing like we were doing now, that is a very nice second best to human interaction. Because, you know, you can see each other's faces, you can read each other's faces, it's the closest you get. But when I talk to young people, and I ask them, you know, what would you prefer? Would you prefer to be with your friends in the same room, or would you prefer to have this, you know, digital interface? And all of them tell me that, no, we prefer being with each other, but then mom has to drive me there because now we don't let our kids outside anymore, you know? So we right. basically captivate them in the house. And so, you know, they're responding to a childhood where they don't have as much freedom. But yeah, it's a little bit of a laziness as well. Actually, a lot of laziness as well. But then there's another thing we have to realize too. When we look at the total hours that these kids spend on digital technology, we tend to think of that as addiction. And they themselves were actually label themselves addicted to a certain extent. Many of them will. Okay. However, this is important too, is that when you and I come home from work, we can kick the door, the world outside away. You know, we can turn on a Netflix show, have a nice drink if we want, you know. Right. They can't do that. It's like the world starts after school. That's when they have to respond to somebody's new profile picture and some drama and, you know, and this goes on. And actually, so to get back to Rachel's point, and I am not good at this myself, by the way, I'm probably the worst. You know, you've heard of the plumber's house is always having broken. You know.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not doing this myself, but I hear very often that kids want their parents to intervene. They actually want to be able to tell their friends that, I'm sorry, it's just mom won't let me be on the screen anymore. Sometimes that's actually help because it's hard for them to communicate that. They get tired and exhausted being on the screens all the time. And when parents, when you have that in place, when you have those habits in place, you are more, it's easier on them sometimes. But you have to have a culture for it at home, because otherwise if you suddenly come in one day and say, hey, I'm going to take your screens away, and then it's much harder.
Right. So why do you think it's important? I mean, again, with all this said, why do you think that it's important to study generational change and to be able to understand the future from that perspective?
Again, I think it really comes back to social change. And I think that in foresight, or maybe not so much in foresight, but in among many people who are in this business of trying to forecast the future or say interesting things about the future, we have a tendency to kind of zoom in on a few things, like a few events or a few technologies, like glitzy items, you know? And then we kind of, you know, all hone in on that. So now it's being, you know, the Bitcoin and artificial intelligence. Now, all of these technologies and everything that happens around us is mostly interesting in the context of human beings. It's human beings. It's a big masses of human beings, actually, that make a change. It's not a technology or a trend itself can't make a change. It's really just, you know, how humans react to it. And I really just think, and I'm not really... It's not so much generation itself. I identify myself as a social scientist more than anything. So I'm interested in gender issues. I'm interested in differences between the haves and the have-nots, geographical interests, the differences. I think all of this is very fascinating, how certain type of people click together and certain people don't, depending on, you know, the circumstances and the variables behind. But I think that generational change is very important because when young people come into a new life stage, it's a whole momentous shift Because suddenly, all the people who were in the workforce, for example, and all the people who were graduate students, all the people who were in this market, now suddenly they're entering a new life phase. Or it's like it's moving. It's a constantly moving target, and there are some presumptions made in this field, where every change or every difference between younger and older people is a generational change. Some people will say it's like, oh, it's all generational change. Look at this 20-year-old versus that 40-year-old. Well, you're comparing a 20 and a 40-year-old. You're going to have different, you have different life phases that some of that is going to always remain, right?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And then you have others who might think that everything is just based on age difference. It's the fact that, if you compare a 50-year-old with a 20-year-old, you're going to have people in different life phases. So there's a little bit of each here. And the interesting part is to figure out what is the onset of a new generational trend and what is just the fact that we're aging and we're entering different life phases. And it actually takes quite a bit of research to get to that point. A lot of data and a lot of research.
Okay.
I have one last question here, because I know that we're wrapping it up. What are some of the important social changes that are not covered in the media at the moment?
I think that many changes are covered to an extent, but I think that, if I can rephrase it, what are we prepared for and what are we not prepared for? I think that a lot of it has to do with the workforce. You will read articles that tell us that we cannot find enough talents. And then you will read another article and it will say, we're not going to have jobs in the future. And of course, people get confused. What is it? What's the truth? And it's actually a little bit of both. So we are going to lack a lot of talents in many fields. And then we're also going to have many jobs that are going to be automated. And when you can automate one job or one aspect of one job, you're killing a whole, it's not like you just take a few positions away. You're taking that whole piece away. That's it. That will not exist anymore. So when, I don't know if I can find an example over the top of my head, but back in the 1800s, you had people who actually were hired to take out the gas lamps at night. When we didn't use gas lamps anymore, those jobs disappeared and they will not be used anymore because we're past that technology. And that's the same thing what's happening really quickly right now. So there are many different positions where we're going to have huge unemployment. But at the same time, we are actually not getting enough young people to choose STEM-related fields. And STEM stands for social, technology, engineering, math.
Yes.
And that is in spite of all the initiatives that we have put forward to get more people. Actually, it's swinging a little bit back. It's getting a little bit better. We're starting to see some progress there, but not near enough. So, and of course, it's not only STEM. There are other areas too. A lot of people fail to recognize that when we become highly automated, there are certain skills that are on the complete different end of the scales that are going to be important, and that is human emotions. Because this is an area that, you have interaction and then you have transaction. So a lot of transactive jobs that only has to do with, I'm dealing with you only because, you're helping me get a service or something or a product. Those jobs, they might disappear. But interactive, so we talked a little bit about therapy. So kids might be texting the therapist and sit while they're sitting in the same room, but at the same time, you can't automate the therapist. You need that human there. So the same thing with teachers. I think a lot of, as we are getting the elder boom, I'm not one of those who believe that we're going to get robots, to take over all the nursing functions. I think that would be a great disservice to our elders. I don't think people want that. So I think that there's a lot of jobs that are going to be available in those sectors. Those are some of those areas. I think the work future, the work-related future, we don't fully see the path forward yet.
Right. So the best is yet to come. And I think this is where futuring is important, to be able to understand the limitations of AI, The limitations. Yes. Artificial intelligence will only be able to take us so far. And so from that, I think that's a great way to start developing ideas for the future. With that, and that oftentimes is in career, especially for Gen Z. What career will I go into? And I think STEM-related fields are excellent for them to go into, because this is very progressive and they're going to need human beings to be able to run the machines, to be able to run the artificial intelligence. Somebody has to feed it, because it won't do it by itself. So, you know, I love that analogy though about the gas lights on the street, right? Because that's it. That we're shifting, but making that shift just means that our job responsibilities, our jobs will be changing. Not necessarily right. That we won't have jobs.
That's correct. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's just, and actually it's funny because a lot of kids today, when you ask them, what is your career going forward? They said, I'm going to invent my own job.
Mm. I love it.
Yes.
I love that. Beautiful, beautiful. So, Anne, I want to thank you so much for coming here and to be able to speak to us about Gen Z. I think a lot of parents will be very interested in this topic. Not only that they'd be interested in this, I really think this is going to help them to be able to help their children be able to make career choices and correct. College choices. I'm 100% pro-education. So, you know, I just don't think we get enough. So I totally support that. But I think this is a great topic. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time and coming and talking to us.
Yes. Thank you, Anne.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
Okay. Wonderful. All right, guys. And I want to thank you for coming back and being able to join us with another episode with another fabulous futurist who has spoken today about Gen Z. I look forward to next week and bringing you another guest next week. Until then, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Foresight Strategy Show. You can hear host Dr. Nilda, co-host Rachel with featured guests every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook Live or anytime on demand. Visit www.drnildaperez.com/show. For more information, sign up to our Foresight Strategies Insider Newsletter, a $10 value for free at www.drnildaperez.com/newsletter.